Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the 3D Muscle Journey podcast. Today, we're joined with Jeff Alberts and Brad Loomis, and we're going to be talking about insecurities. Now, I'm a little bit insecure about starting this podcast, so we're going to talk about insecurities, how it kind of underlines a lot of bodybuilding, some reasons why we may have gotten into bodybuilding. When we're standing on stage or competing in any kind of strength or physique sport, as coaches, as athletes, as a healthcare practitioner, and everything in between. So happy to be here, excited about this, and I'm looking forward to a good conversation.
You know, Nick, before we started this, I was like, okay, I'm remodeling my office, and I have all this stuff around me that's out of place. And being that I am the godfather, you know, everybody kind of looks at me like I'm supposed to be like this perfect bodybuilder who's all in line. But all this stuff behind me is driving me nuts. And I was insecure about coming on this podcast and having everybody see my mess behind me. And then I had to ask you guys, which glasses do you guys like better? Because I was insecure about which glasses I should wear in the podcast, if I should wear any at all. And because Brandon, who is our behind the scenes technical guy, said I need to have the microphone closer. Well, that meant I had to wear my glasses because the microphone's closer and it blurs my eyes and I can't see you guys, so it's blurry. So I just wanted to say that I'm insecure with a lot of things outside of bodybuilding and inside of bodybuilding. And even starting this podcast, I didn't want to be the host because I don't feel like I'm a good host because I'm insecure about it. But obviously, I'm doing a pretty good job right now. So anyways, I think I'll let you guys start talking a little bit too, because I'm starting to get insecure about how much I'm talking.
Well, I appreciate opening up like that, Jeff. It seems like we're really just going full disclosure today and everything. So I guess we'll start with what got us into bodybuilding. So for me, it was never something out of insecurity. I was never like the overweight kid. I was always somewhat athletic and always just wanted to keep improving and improving. But have you guys had any experience with kind of getting into bodybuilding and having that spark because of any kind of insecurities?
I didn't get into bodybuilding because of insecurities. I got into bodybuilding because my health kind of, I believed that bodybuilding was going to help my health, and specifically my back disorders. And so that's what got me into like serious bodybuilding. And really not even so much the sport, but just serious weight training, which led to, of course, bodybuilding, you know, and just that lifestyle, I guess you might say. But prior to that, yeah, I kind of got into just weight training in general, due to insecurities with just kind of being a little bit of overweight, a little bit of a fat boy, you know? And I think that's fairly common. I mean, you guys correct me if I'm wrong here, but we get a lot of people that are insecure about being overweight. They're insecure about society and their I don't want to say focus, but just how much more value you seem to have in the world if you're the Instagram model, if you got the shreds, if you got the abs, et cetera, you know. Just today, for like the very first time ever, I was on the Gymshark Instagram page, and there was a model on there that was, you know, she was overweight. She had some body fat on her, and Gymshark was celebrating that body type and kind of, you know, promoting an all-inclusive population, you know, in their attire. And I couldn't believe the haters that were in there, just like, I mean, basically just shaming Gymshark for how, you know, dare they put that look on their page, you know? And, I don't know, I kind of related to that model, 'cause it was kind of like, that was me, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old was like, you know what? I don't fit in, you know, and I need to fit in more, you know, I need to be more, you know, in style with the trends that were going on. So, I mean, I can't say that's what kind of got me into the iron game, but it didn't really get me into bodybuilding per se.
Yeah. I didn't start training because of insecurity. I started training actually as an escape from my home reality. Cause at the time I had a little bit of a rough childhood. My mother got remarried. My stepfather was a little rough around the edges. And I know I was kind of a spoiled kid. My mom babied me a little bit. So he was trying to mold me into becoming more of a man. So it was just a big transition in my life at that time. And I was about 13, 14 years old when I started training. So it was more of an escape. It wasn't an insecurity thing. But actually competing, like getting on stage, it was an insecurity because there was no way I was getting on stage in these little tiny little Speedos. I was like, there's no way, I ain't doing that. And, you know, I was too macho for that. Like, no way, I'm not doing that. And it took a lot of coaxing from my ex-wife, a lot of encouragement to actually say, you can do that. You know, you just, you know, give it a shot. So the insecurities actually kept me away from doing certain things, kind of like the start of this podcast of being a podcast host. Like, I know I can probably do it. It's just, the fear of messing up. And I think a lot of times with the athletes we work with, that insecurity creeps in that, you know, can I get big enough? Can I get shredded enough? Can I compete with other people? So there's a lot of insecurity, I think, in this sport that prevents us from doing what we want to do, or, you know, what makes us truly happy, because we're fearful of what other people are going to, how they're going to perceive us. So yeah, I think, there's a lot here that we can definitely dive into.
Yeah. I think one of the underlying things here that we were probably going to talk about, and I think we'll probably get to mention it now, is that with these situations where, whether it's something on Instagram that we see, or we have this image that we want to become, or we're insecure with people next to us on stage, it's important to remember that that's all external. So like if we took ourselves and transported us onto some island, we wouldn't have those same feelings. Those are all very external. So I think what this comes down to ultimately is similar to our, you know, theme here with 3DMJ, is that we want to love the journey and appreciate the journey rather than the day to day, right? We want to keep the big picture in mind. A lot of times, this is used in business, where if you have a business, the idea isn't to focus on your competitors. It's to focus on growing your own business and building longevity in your own business. And I think that really hits home to this conversation, because sometimes it feels like it's coming from inside of us, but really it's from outside. It's what society has given us, what our circle of followers has given us. So I think it's important to remember that if we ever do feel insecure about something, especially bodybuilding or our physique, it's important to remember that all we can do is just improve ourselves and just kind of focus on our own journey and work toward that journey rather than, you know, get caught in comparing ourselves to others and letting it bring us down.
That's oftentimes easier said than done.
100%.
Yeah, because we're in if you're a competitive bodybuilder, then that's basically kind of the end goal, right? Is to get on stage and to do well and to look better than the person standing to your left and to your right. And even for me, like, it took a long time to get to a place where I can actually go to a show. And I'm still competitive, don't get me wrong. Like, I want to do well. But at the end of the day, you know, I've had to learn to teach myself to not let's say, a panel of judges dictate my success. Like, because it's very subjective. Like, there's 7 people, 9 people on a judging panel. And to give them full power of, like, what success truly is. I had to really kind of just, you know, think hard about that and go, okay, here I am investing, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks, months of dieting and training. And in my case, years. It wasn't until 2014 when I realized heading into the Pro International, like, you know what? I'm not going to let the panel of judges tell me how successful I am or not based off of placings. I'm going to go there and celebrate my journey up to that point. And up to that point, it's the best I've ever been. So to me, I'm like, hey, I should have that power to tell myself that, hey, this is the best I've ever been. I've already won. And whatever happens at the show, that's just, like you said, it's external. It's like an external placing. And I realized that, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the road, no one's going to remember where I placed at that show. Only I will. And so to me, it just kind of makes sense. Like, I had to learn how to really kind of define my own success, define in a sense what bodybuilding is for me. And a lot of times when you see YouTube videos or Instagram or what have you, you know, you'll see different, like, in my opinion, you'll see different people with different phases of their journey. Some people value, hey, I'm a pro bodybuilder. I do well in shows, so this is success. Then you have another camp over here that says, no, okay, well, I have 100,000 Instagram followers. This is success. And then you have another camp that says, well, you know what? I'm a little overweight and I train. I love how it feels. This is success. So there's all kinds of different ways to interpret and to define what true success is and where you belong. And for me personally, I've seen like an evolution of all that with me. Because early on, it was more about the trophies and trying to get notoriety in the sport. And then it became, hey, I just want to have fun because I got burned out on trying to be so hardcore with that. And then I had fun with it. And then it was like, okay, and then I got back into, hey, let's have fun and do well. And then here I am as a older bodybuilder. And there's a little insecurity with that, being a little older. I'm starting to see my physique. I'm still at the top of my game, but it's getting harder and harder to be at the top of my game. There's a lot more struggle. So there's a little insecurity knowing that it's not going to be long where I'm going to be at the very tail end. I'm going to start declining, you know, from where I've been. So there's a little insecurity there. So now I'm at a point where I'm really appreciating everything there is that the sport has to offer. So even the days where, you know, hey, I don't do well in the gym, and the days that, hey, maybe I'm a little overweight in the off season or whatever, it's like, it's okay. You know, I'm still doing what I love to do and I'm happy doing it, and that's good enough. So to me, it's just been an evolution, but there's still like, there's battles that I have every single day when it comes to insecurity. Even just making a simple post on Instagram, I'll really think about it. And there's some stuff that I don't even put out. And I'm like, cause I'm just like, I want things to be so perfect that I'm hesitant about putting anything out there in the world, because I want it to be well accepted. And, you know, I probably need to get over that a little bit, because even if something isn't, let's say, perfect, or it's far from perfect, but if it can help, let's say, one person, then it's beneficial. So I still have to get over some insecurity with some things, not just bodybuilding, but life itself.
Jeff, I remember how insecure you were as a coach when we very first started. I remember the very first little, kind of a get together seminar, whatever you want to call it. Remember, it was up here in the snow, and I put you guys up in that cabin out there, and you were like, you didn't even want to get up in front of everybody and talk. No. And it was just locals. They were just locals here in my little town and members of my gym. And you were dreading getting up there and
it was out of my comfort zone. Like for me, I could get like heading into my first show, I was scared about being in the Speedos, but once I got exposed to it and realized, okay, everybody else is in their Speedos. This is no big deal. This is what it's about. Then that I just got confident because I exposed myself to it. So heading into that seminar, I'm a quiet guy by nature. Like doing these podcasts, like if you told me, hey, Jeff, we're going to do podcasts when we first started, I'm like, oh, heck no. I'm the guy that won't get up in front of the classroom and answer questions or do a speech or anything like that. Like, hey, I just want to be, I'm a fly in the wall type of guy. I just want to be just, I'll chill in the room and just listen to people talk. So that was scary to me to actually talk in front of people. And even if it is bodybuilders or fitness people that let's say I have more knowledge in, I'm still going to feel that way. And even the last seminar that I did with the team in Australia, same feelings, like just getting up there and talking. It's like, ugh, this is like nerve wracking. So yeah, I still, even to this day, even right now, I'm still kind of, especially when the last podcast I did with Nick and Eric, I'm like, oh my gosh, these are two doctors. You know, I just have a high school diploma, man. These guys are like, I barely got any words in. They're like so two intelligent guys. So it's taken me a lot to realize that I do have things to offer. It just may not be in their field, but I have little niches here and there that I can, little nuggets that I can throw in there. But yeah, I was definitely insecure with that seminar, but it was good exposure. And I think that's what you have to do when you're insecure. You kind of have to expose yourself to things. Because what I've learned too, and this is like what I tell my athletes, is that insecurity can be a thief of joy. If you're always insecure about everything, you're going to be miserable through the whole process. And a lot of times when you go through an entire contest prep, if you're nervous the whole way through, worried about progress all the time, worried about if you're going to be shredded enough, et cetera, like you, before you know it, the show's over and you look back and go, oh my God, I didn't even enjoy it because I was a stressed out mess because I was so insecure about everything. So I really try to encourage people, just let it all hang out and just enjoy it. If you mess up, big deal. You're going to learn and you'll get better next time.
It's really comforting to hear that coming from Jeff, because I know I went through something similar with bodybuilding. In the beginning, it's all very much focused on the place you get, and it's very sad and upsetting afterwards if you don't get the place that you were getting. And I think for me, I wasn't really sure why I was competing at that point. I kind of wanted to get a trophy and like tell my family, like, hey, I did this thing and I got first place. And no matter if you know what bodybuilding is, you know that first place is good. But then once I kind of reconnected with my why and realized that I'm not doing this to get a trophy, I'm doing this because I love it and I want to do it forever, that was one of the most freeing transitions that I could have ever gone through. And it just made me so much more appreciative of the journey and made me enjoy it much, much more. And I almost feel like, so we started this podcast with the question of, did we get into bodybuilding because of insecurities? I would say for me, it may have been the opposite, where I thought I was way better at first. I was kind of the most ripped guy in the gym that I was working out at. And I said, what the heck? Like, people are telling me to compete. Like, all right, I'll do it. I'll jump on stage. I had people telling me, you know, to make like a simple syrup mixture and like drink it before I get on stage. And they're like, oh, you're going to win the whole show and get your pro card. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means, but all right, I'll go into it. And so then as I started competing more and more and more and getting more and more involved in natural bodybuilding and following more natural bodybuilders and going to more shows, then I started realizing, whoa, I have a very long way to go. So my insecurities almost like kind of started low and then peaked a bit. And then as I kind of got more comfortable with everything, kind of leveled off a little bit. And I think that that's very similar to my journey in education and physical therapy as well. You start out of school thinking you're the man or woman and you're going to go cure the world. And then you get, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And then you have the existential crisis, like, oh my goodness, what? I don't know anything. And then it kind of levels out a little bit. So, interesting that for me, it was kind of that opposite. I got into it when I kind of felt like the man. And then as I got more and more experienced, I knew I had a lot more to go and a lot more to learn.
Yeah, that was exactly my experience, Nick, as a coach. Because I got into bodybuilding, again, because of health issues, and did quite well, you know, as a bodybuilder. And then kind of at the same time I was getting into bodybuilding and doing really well in bodybuilding, I started up my business, and I started Healthy Bodies Fitness, and I started, you know, training people and coaching people. And as a coach, Jeff and I say this quite a bit, but thank goodness that, you know, Instagram and the YouTubes and all of that kind of stuff didn't really exist, you know, because good Lord, I would have made a total ass of myself. I really would have, because at the time, you know, if I just showed up to a bodybuilding competition, I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to buy the DVD because I'm going to win my class. And not only that, but I'm going to be in that DVD a lot because I'm going to be in there for the class win and I'm going to be in that DVD for the overall. So it's going to be a lot of me and I'm going to want to watch me, you know? And so naturally, when you're doing that good in bodybuilding and like the local paper here, you know, is writing newspaper articles on you and everything, you're this big fish in this little pond. And so as a coach, I was just like, I was always right, you know? I was always the one that was like, well, I'm not paying attention to magazines. I'm paying attention to what journals say, and I'm going to paying attention to what the evidence says, even though I really still don't know how to interpret like evidence very good. But I was always right, you know, and you took my advice and my advice was the right way to do it. And if you didn't do it my way, it was wrong. You know, now, you know, fast forward, what is it now? 10, 12, 15 years. There's sometimes when I'm like Jeff and I know that I know what I'm talking about, but boy, I'm very careful about how I put things out there. You know, I'm very careful about how I word things. And when I post up on Instagram, I don't even like putting stuff on YouTube anymore. I really don't. I have some good, or at least what I think is pretty good content to put on YouTube. And I just don't feel comfortable doing it, you know? And social media is just as a whole right now has kind of taken a bit of a toxic turn. And it's reinforced my insecurities to the point to where I no longer feel like I'm free to, but like freedom of speech is kind of almost like a bit of a clamp on it, you know? Like I'm afraid sometimes to say something, even though I know it's right, or even though I know that it's how I do business, I'm very careful when I do put stuff out there because of the insecurities. And like I said, thank goodness that this type of environment was not around back in 2000, you know, 5 to about 2008, because I would have made an ass of myself.
Hey, 3DMJers. This is Andrea Valdez popping in here real quick to tell you that we have 3DMJ tank tops available for the very first time ever in our apparel store. They just launched last week. They're a dark charcoal gray or a heathered black, depending on how you like to look at it. And they have the new 3DMJ logo that we released last year on the front, which is in our usual 3D blue with white lettering. If you'd like to buy these new tanks or our classic black t-shirts that we sold last year, both designs are now available over at 3dmusclejourney.com/apparel. That's 3dmusclejourney.com/apparel. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the rest of the show.
I got two stories. I got one from a coaching perspective, and then I have one as a competitor. So on the coaching perspective, the insecurity for me when we first started 3D Muscle Journey, and you guys are like, all right, Jeff, you're going to start taking some athletes. My fear was, I don't want to mess these people up. Like actually coaching someone, my fear was like doing the wrong things and I don't mind screwing myself up with like my prep or whatever, but doing it to someone else, like that was the biggest fear. And I also had an insecurity because at the time, if you remember, Brad, it was like, you know, Lane Norton, Dr. Joe, and a lot of the talk on the boards was all science. And my background isn't the science background. It's the, hey, I've been in the trenches since the early 90s background. Like I've seen all the things that you shouldn't be doing. Like I did that. So I have like all this in the trenches experience. But at the time, this like everybody was so heavily involved in the science. And if you didn't do things exactly like the science is saying, then you're doing things wrong. So for me, it was hard to kind of get a grasp on that and gain confidence in that time. And it took a while as a coach to realize that coaching and the science or being a researcher is two different things. And we all know now, like, okay, the research is useful. It's basically tools for us coaches to utilize under individual context. That's how I kind of look at it now. So can I apply these tools to this person's situation? And so in the past, I would have been fearful of, let's say, putting someone on a bro split, because everybody would look at me like, oh my gosh, what's Jeff doing? He's putting this guy on a bro split. And everybody was like, oh, shame on you. That's terrible. You're bad. And I'm like, okay. But I have no problem now putting someone on, let's say, a 3-day bro split if it fits their context. You know, if they're working 50 hours a week, you know, they don't have time to train and they have, you know, like Nick, babies on the way and, you know, all this good stuff. Like, it's like, okay, you know, hey, this right now, this person should train 3 days a week and hitting each body part once per week, because it's going to keep overall stress levels low. They'll probably perform a lot better, recover better. So they'll have a better handle on their overall supply and demand. So it's taken me 11 years of coaching to get to this point to where I can have all these different perspectives and see all these different individual contexts and come up with ways to, you know, try to make people's, you know, bodybuilding and life better. Cause I look at, okay, we need to make sure that, you know, we're progressing well as a bodybuilder, but also doing it in a way where quality of life remains at its highest. So it's gotten to a point, like I said, in the very beginning, there was just no way I was going to give a bro split to somebody, even though in my mind, I like, this is probably makes a lot of sense, but I'm too scared of what people are going to say about it. So I think it's comforting now to kind of look in hindsight and know I've come a long way as a coach, that I'm integrating a lot of different tools. Like, I'm using the science, I'm using my experience, I'm using athletes' experiences and their context in trying to come up with protocols that are in their best interest. So that's kind of the coaching perspective of how I've kind of evolved with the insecurity level. And there's still times when I'm insecure as a coach, like some, you know, not every athlete is going to progress the way we would like them to for whatever reason. And there's no coach out there that can probably say, hey, every single one of my athletes 100% on point and they're optimal 100% of the time. So there's those moments when you're like, man, I really wish this person would get more out of what we're trying to do. And for whatever reason it is, whether it's on my side or their side, you know, there's always that insecurity of like, am I doing enough? So I'm always going to have that. And I think that's a good thing too. It's kind of a double-edged sword. Like, you have to have that desire to get better. But at the same time, it can be a thief of joy. So I try to remind myself that even as a coach, it's easier for me as an athlete to tell myself, hey, don't let the insecurity get to you because it's going to rob the happiness. But as a coach, I still struggle with that at times. And then on the athlete side, I remember the first natural show, like legitimate natural show I did, was the 1999 Capital City Bob and Tina show. And it was the first year, and my exposure to bodybuilding prior to that was NPC. It was AAU, so non-tested shows. You had a mix of, you know, some naturals, not natural. So when I got to this all natural show and I saw this one guy backstage, he was shredded. Like what's interesting now, like when I look back in hindsight, like, okay, yeah, he wasn't that shredded. But at the time, back in 99, he was peeled. And of course, he was leaner than me. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, okay, there's no way this guy's natural because he's better than me. That's what, and it was an insecurity. So I didn't like go up to him and say, hey, you're cheating or whatnot. It was just more internal. And I said it under my breath with my brother. So it was like a lot of insecurity because of my ego. Because at the time, you know, I did fairly well in shows as a natural in non-tested shows. So I was like, okay, as a natural bodybuilder, I should win this show. Like going into this all natural show, I should win. And when I saw that guy, I was like, there's just no way. So it was insecurity that basically kind of skewed my judgment. And in a sense, I was immature. Like, I wasn't mature in my thinking to think that I was better than than any natural that was at the show because of that insecurity. And I think that happens a lot online when you see the accusations when it comes to that topic. And it's a very touchy topic. And I get accused. What's interesting is I get accused of not being natural. And I just think back, well, you know, what's the person that's accusing me? Are they in the same shoes that I was 20 years ago? So it's, to me, it's just like that. Sometimes that insecurity can really skew our judgment and cloud our judgment. And it prevents us from actually growing and learning as a person because you have these walls up because of that ego. So I think it's important to, you know, kind of let go of some of that ego and realize and kind of be honest with yourself as far as like that insecurity.
Jeff, that really brings up a point that I was just thinking about. And it's that you can have the thing with insecurity is that it can take the same objective experience and make it completely different. So for example, if you went to that show with a different mindset and maybe a little bit, you know, less insecure, maybe you would have looked at that other competitor and looked as an opportunity to meet him or talk to him and learn about his family and learn about where he lives and stuff like that.
Exactly. But like then, that's exactly what I should have did. I should have been, okay, walls should have been down and I should have engaged because I probably could have learned. Because obviously, if he's in that condition, there's a reason, right? So he's probably more educated from the bodybuilding perspective side of things, maybe other techniques or whatever, and I could have learned from them and bettered myself. But again, not engaging, like you said, Nick, it just basically kind of just held me back.
Right. And then like you were saying with the person who's now accusing you, maybe they're just in that phase still. What I find interesting is that, and for me anyway, was that you get insecure, but then you kind of overcome it. And then you get insecure at the next step. And then you overcome that. And then you get insecure at that. And then you overcome that. So for example, let's take high school, for example. Maybe you're insecure with your group of high school friends or insecure with something to do with high school. And then you graduate and you go back to high school and the same four walls feel a lot different. And then, but maybe you're insecure about college now. So now college is like this scary, like insecure place. But then you graduate college and go to grad school. And then you go back to your undergrad and it's like, oh, this place isn't that. It feels different. Like it feels friendlier and like a little bit, you know, more easygoing. And for me with, you know, with coming on the team here, I can say for sure that initially I was very insecure and I did not that you made me feel insecure, but just my own insecurities with starting this new thing and treating, you know, athletes online and being involved with 3DMJ and all this was coming at me at the same time. I was writing and I was coming on podcasts. And although I loved it and was passionate about it, I was almost second guessing everything I was saying. But then you kind of overcome that aspect, and then the next thing gets a little insecure. And now coming on a podcast tonight, not even, you know, no nervousness or anything. It's more just looking forward to talking to a couple friends. But it wasn't like that in the beginning. So it's interesting how we kind of get insecure about something. Maybe it's new, or maybe it's something that we're just not used to, and then we overcome that. And I think it's important that we do overcome that because, like we're saying, it kind of blocks us off from feedback and taking feedback as constructive feedback and using it to improve ourselves rather than taking it as an insult. So I know I've asked, you know, all of you pretty much for feedback at one point or another. And if I was so insecure that any kind of critique on an article that I wrote or something I said on a podcast, if I took that personally, I wouldn't be able to grow and improve. And I think that's a big part of insecurity, is that it prevents us from growing because we need that feedback to improve. And sometimes our insecurities can make constructive feedback, you know, take it as like a personal hit to our soul. Even like negative comments on posts that I've put up. If there's a negative comment, I've gotten to a point where there's always something to learn. Even if someone says you're stupid, that doesn't, you know, you should never write again. okay, like, I don't agree with that, but tell me more. Like, why do you think that? Like, what about it? You know, and maybe I could understand your point of view a little bit, rather than, you know, just take that as a hit and then try to, you know, either fight back or just cower. I think having some confidence and getting over that insecurity can help make you invincible almost to those critiques and help make any critique or any kind of feedback just get you, you know, make you stronger.
Yeah, one of the things that I really admire about Alberto is his skin, his thick skin.
I thought you were going to say his hair.
Well, that's another reason to admire him, that's for sure. But probably even more admirable than his hair, you know, is his thick skin. And I don't remember exactly what the circumstances were, but all five of us were together. Not you, Nick, you weren't there, but I mean all five of us as in Jeff, Eric, Alberto, myself, and Andrea. And I don't remember exactly how Alberto said it, but he said, you know, that's one thing that I kind of pride myself on is that I don't really take praise very well to heart. And likewise, I don't, take criticism, you know, very, very well to heart. So by all means, you know, tear me apart. And I was just like, I was taken aback by that. I'm like, I don't think I've ever heard that before out of anybody. And I certainly couldn't relate, but like you said, it almost makes you bulletproof in a way when you almost can't be hurt, you know, by negative comments, you know, people that don't even know you, you know, that are making negative comments and a lot of times don't even know the subject that they're talking about. And it almost makes me kind of jealous of him sometimes because I am a little bit on the thin skin side. And I do tend to be a little bit, you know, more sensitive, especially more so now that I'm closer to the 5-0 number than I was to the 3-0 number. But yeah, that's one thing that I really admired about him is that guy just, you know, you could, I think sometimes you could just tear him apart. You could just berate him and he'd be like, okay, duly noted.
He gave you the Bert stare. Yeah, okay. And then that's it. And then he moves on with his day.
One of the things that this just made me think of was how can we as coaches or as a healthcare provider or as a friend or as a spouse or anything, how can we create this environment that builds trust and doesn't feed into insecurities? So back to my example, when joining the team, I immediately felt this was a safe place for me. I felt like it was okay to be wrong. I felt like it was okay to make mistakes. But if that wasn't the case, my insecurities would probably have lasted much longer. I could be the most confident person in the world, but if you're in an environment where your colleagues, your superiors, don't create that trusting environment, then that will prevent you from overcoming that initial insecurity, I think. So I think in my experience as with working with athletes, especially when it comes to pain and injury, a lot of motivational interviewing and opening up about things and even opening up about my own personal things just to allow it to become a safe place so that they can kind of put that guard down, and then any feedback, any critiques that we have will be well received and we won't kind of, you know, hit that wall. So I think creating that environment is something that we probably do and maybe not even think about it. But I think once you experience an environment where that isn't there, where that trust isn't there and you feel like you're walking on eggshells and you're afraid to make a mistake, that creates lies. Yeah. That creates people not coming forward and saying what's on their mind, that prevents us from getting past these insecurities. And I think setting that environment is so important when it comes to this.
I think I could speak for all of us coaches. Like usually when we first start up with an athlete, like I know I do on a Skype call, like I often mention, you know, within the first 15, 20, 30 minutes that, you know, we definitely value open, honest communication, a two-way street. So I want to hear about the things that go well. I mean, everybody wants to hear that, but I also want to hear things that maybe don't go so well or that athlete doesn't enjoy maybe something that we're doing, because obviously if something's not working, then I want to put our heads together to find something that will work. But something could work, but they may not like it. And I want to hear that too. So that way, maybe there's an alternative that we can do that we can get progress as well, but they enjoy it more. Because in the end, remember, this is a journey, right? And it's the process itself is supposed to be enjoyable. Yeah, I mean, the progress is important, but when you start to love the process more than the progress, that's where you find true happiness with what we're doing. So I put high value in that communication so athletes do feel comfortable. When let's say things aren't going too well, and oftentimes when we're not adhering to something, you don't want to disappoint people. You don't want to disappoint your coach. You don't want to disappoint your spouse or whatever. So you have that fear and insecurity of like, what kind of response am I going to get if I do say, hey, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I've actually had one or two people that came to me and said they were scared to say that they weren't adhering because of past experience with past coaches. Because they got reprimanded, it's like, you did wrong. You shouldn't do that again. Whereas for me, I understand that we're all human. We're not perfect. And there's a reason maybe adherence isn't good. It could be on my end. It could be the protocols I'm assigning just are too stressful for them to execute with context of their life. So I want to know, if that's the case. And I also want to know if there's something else that maybe they're just dealing with that is just making things challenging. And if I can give some leeway, and in this person's case, it was having a hard time adhering to the diet. So instead of trying to lower calories down or, hey, let's do more activity, which would just amplify stress even more, I actually said, hey, let's just either keep calories the same or just elevate them a little higher and see if we can actually improve adherence. But don't take it as a failure. It's like it's a learning experience. If it didn't go well, it's a learning experience. Get better from it. So that's kind of my thoughts on that, as far as like that initial conversation.
Do you know the comedian Sebastian Maniscalco?
Yeah, I don't know that guy.
Me neither.
Okay. Well, he has this bit where he says, along the same lines of you're afraid to give, to be honest and tell the coach that you weren't adherent. He does this bit where he says he has the actual price of something and then the price that he tells his father. So like when his father walks into his house, he'll walk up to, a mirror and he'll say, hey, how much you pay for that thing? And he'll say like the price he tells his father is like, oh, it was like $50, but then it was really like $350 or something. So that environment of his father and him, there, that trust was not built, and he's insecure around his father for some reason, right? And I find myself doing that too sometimes. Like I had a landscaper come and do something in my yard, and it was I forget what it was, but I told my father it was like $25 less than it was, and I didn't think about it until after, and I was like, why did I just do that? Like, it made no sense at all. Like, it was a big job, and I think it was like $375, and I was like, I did it for $350, it wasn't too bad. And it just sounded better to me for some reason. But I think creating that environment is so important. And now that I have a daughter, I think about as she gets older, how I'm going to create that environment. And I totally respect people that allow their babies to get older, but my daughter's going to stay 1 year old forever. But I totally respect people that allow their kids to get older, but I'm just not going to do that. But I think about I want her to come to me and say, when she's in elementary school and say, I got picked on tonight. It made me feel a certain way. I'd rather than just kind of hide and not open up to me, or I'd rather her say like, I lied yesterday to you. What I told you was this, but I meant to, I really did that. I want her to do that without fearing, fearing getting yelled at or fearing getting punished. I'd rather her have that open environment. And then of course, as she does get older and physical insecurities come into play, or insecurities about anything, right, that can come in a young girl's life, I want to have built that foundation, that environment, so that she is open enough, you know, to talk to not only me, but her friends too. And maybe by having that open communication, and maybe that will help other people become less, you know, insecure and a little bit off from bodybuilding, but I think it all kind of has the same theme to it.
It all transcends. I mean, if you're, as a coach, like if you're not getting the honest feedback from an athlete, it's very hard to do your job. That's like going into a doctor's office and, hey doc, I'm sick. What's wrong with you? Nothing. I just don't feel well. And I mean, what? Okay, how are you going to diagnose that? You know, how are you going to treat that? So it's kind of the same thing. Like if you're having an athlete and they're leaving things off the table, you don't even know what's going on, then how can you be a coach? So there's a lot of value in that, for sure.
Yeah, and it, at least for me, it actually enhances my coaching experience with the individual when there's that open line of communication. Because I kind of contrast the way that I used to do business when we first started to kind of how I've done business over the last 2 or 3 years. You know, when we first started doing business, since, you know, I kind of had this mindset that I was the authority, we'd get all the information on the application, you know. And then I would just make up the protocol based on the information that they gave us, and then send it to them, send the spreadsheet to them along with their instructions and everything. And then, you know, basically was just expecting them to kind of get it done, you know. And oftentimes what ended up happening was just like Jeff said, you know, it's like the patient that comes to you and says, yeah, I just don't feel well. It's just not a very rewarding experience, you know, when you're just saying, okay, well, let's go ahead and decrease carbs or increase volume or whatever, you know. And so now, you know, since in the last 3 or 4 years, since I've kind of done a 180 on that, I almost insist that, you know, we meet face to face. Yes, I've got the application and I've got a good idea, you know, of where I kind of want to start things. But you know, kind of like Jeff, I want to hear from them, and I kind of have my specific way of trying to draw them out and draw the person out. You know, the real person that's inside of them. You know, how did you learn about 3D Muscle Journey? What are your favorite sources of content that we produce? I see that this is your goal. Okay, so let's get on the same page there. You know, and I try to get them to do the majority of the talking for like the first, sometimes half an hour, you know, of our initial interview, you know, to really get them in that safe place to where I want them to talk, you know, and it just trickles on down the line to where it's like every check-in that comes in after that, they're not afraid to tell me this or that, or it's a good thing or it's a bad thing. And I invite that. I have like certain criteria that I have them rate, kind of like the pain scale that we see in healthcare. 0 is no pain and 10 is the worst pain in the world, you know. And it feels better as a coach. You feel like you know a person, and you feel like you know, it's like you're developing a relationship with somebody that you might only see pictures of them, you know, when you get them, or at least that's the way it used to feel, you know, like 8-10 years ago when we very, very first started. And to kind of bring it around into that kind of family analogy, Nick, that you kind of talked about, you know, one thing that I've always told my family, you know, and luckily I have small family, it's my wife and my kid, right? And my two cats. So I guess this kind of includes them too, but no secrets, you know, there's no secrets in this household, you know. If it's something that you're afraid to talk about, or if it's something that you know, you feel is wrong to talk about, that in itself is wrong, and that's the real sin, you know. There's no secrets in the Loomises, you know. And so it's just, I think it's all around a better experience. It's better for the athlete. It's better for the coach. It's a more intimate experience, and usually your end product, whatever that is, it ends up being better.
Yeah, it's even very similar with our team dynamic. Like, I think we're all open, like, because we have our meetings, and you know there'll be some issues here and there. I mean, every business has some issues, but I think as a team, what we've done really well, probably thanks to Eric, who really at least taught me how to open up a lot, because I was insecure about showing my emotions and expressing them, because I was really closed in, and he got me to open up, and that just solved like a lot of issues. Personally, solved a lot of issues for me, but. As far as any time there's an issue with the team, it's always squashed really quickly because we're all very open and honest with one another. And sometimes it's not always pleasant, but it always, like, usually, like, after the meetings are over, it's like, okay, I feel so much better. And now we can move on in a productive way. And I think that's why we're in, what are we in, year 11 now? And I think we're stronger than ever. Like, we're definitely stronger now than we were in year one. So it's huge, like communication, being open, being honest, and not having that fear of whether you're working with a coach or what have you, or business partner. Like, if you're open and honest, you'll have better success. Like basically you just said, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think we've talked a lot about how insecurity can be a negative thing. Now, can insecurity be positive? So in my eyes, I feel like insecurities, so once you feel that, once you get some feedback that just stings and it lasts with you for days and you can't stop thinking about it, that right there is where you want to explore more, right? So I feel like when we feel that sting of when something just hits our deepest insecurity, maybe we didn't even know about it, that is where we should put our time and effort. So insecurities can almost be the guiding light to self-improvement, because it will, you know, what about that comment made me feel like that? I get so many other words put into my ear, into my brain, and interpreted. Why did those words stick with me so much? And then that can kind of almost kind of turn us in to look inside ourselves and say, okay, why am I so insecure about my, I don't know, car? Why am I so insecure about my car? What is it about my car that I can't take a comment about my car about, right? And it can kind of guide us to where to put the work. And I think it also,
you translate that over to like what I deal with, let's say on Instagram every single day, is people's insecurity of not knowing the answers ahead of time. How much volume should I be doing? What rep ranges? Should I be doing three reps in reserve, then two, then one, then deload it? Like everybody had, like a lot of younger athletes, like you're saying, Nick, it's the same thing. It's, I don't know the answers now. I need and want to know the answers now ahead of time. So therefore I'm going to go externally for those answers. I'm going to rely on X content producer to tell me how I should be doing things. And what they don't realize is, hey, all this content that you're getting is just basically some general guidelines. But to find true answers and to really cure your insecurities, you actually have to be in the trenches and experience things. You have to, oh, let me try 10 sets a week. How did that work? Did it work good? Did I progress? Yes or no? Okay, you found an answer. Move on. Okay, then you just get, it's evolving too, because here I am in year number 34 and I still don't know everything there is to know about bodybuilding. I don't know everything there is to know about myself. I'm still learning. So it's frustrating for me when I get those questions quite frequently. And oftentimes because the person is insecure, they'll rely on that external source. Okay, I'm going to rely on, okay, Eric Helms says this. Mike Israetel says this. This guy over here says this. And they think, okay, who's right? Who's wrong? And then they're getting caught up in, and they kind of perceive things as a debate. Like, okay, this guy's right. This guy's right or wrong. And it's not who's right or who's wrong, but you got to use critical thinking skills. Like, okay, if Mike Israetel says this, how to do a mesocycle, how can I apply it to my situation, my context? Does it make sense right now for me to do that? Yes or no? But Eric says this over here. Okay, does that make sense for me to do it? Could be a combination of the two. So I've been answering, like, I've been getting these questions the last, I don't know how long this debate's going on now, 2-3 weeks, whatever it is. And I'm like, it could be both. It doesn't have to be one way or the other. You could intermix all these principles together depending on context. A lot of that insecurity with training, with diet, it's in a sense, people want to know the answers now. And the thing is you're going to get your answers, but it's more going to be like internally, like you're going to find it internally using the tools that, you know, all the content providers are sending out, all the information they're sending out. So to me, it's like people need to kind of like, once you kind of get over that, you've realized, okay, I don't know the answer now, but that's okay. I'm going to find out. So whether you're, let's say you try something, if you're successful with it, great. You just learned that works. If you don't, okay, you just learned it doesn't work. Cross it off, move on to the next thing and keep experimenting. That's basically how I've got more confident as a coach, is like I can look back on the 34 years of training, all that trial and error, all that experience. And that's why I'm confident as a coach now, because I lean more on those experiences than I do on, let's say, the science and the research. Like that helps me here and there to maybe, you know, incorporate some new tools that I have in my toolbox. But it's all that experience and the wisdom I've gained, not just through bodybuilding, but through life itself. And in a sense, you see with different perspectives, because you can look at one thing and go, okay, that's not right. It's not wrong. It just depends on what the context is in the current environment. So to me, it's like, I think that's the biggest thing when I see with people that are not very experienced, is just the insecurities. Again, it just robs them of like the actual process, the journey of like the joy in it. Like that's part of the fun. Like I could wish I could go back 34 years. I wish I could go back in time and do it over again and have like a more of an open mind, open heart, and to embrace the process a lot more. And the hunt for progress, like that's fun. Like I'm already at the tail end. Like there's not much progress left for me to make, and it's not as fun for me. I don't have the same drive as I used to. Like, you know, you guys have probably done this. You wake up in the morning like, man, I can't wait till 5 o'clock because I'm going to train and I'm going to do bench. Then I'm going to do rows. And this is how many sets I'm going to do and all the reps. And you got this passion that you just want to get after it because you're just eager to make progress and get after it. Like, I don't have that anymore. I wake up and I'm like, okay, I got to get my son ready for school. Okay, I got to work with my athlete. And don't get me wrong, I'm excited about all these things, but the training is just like, I'm so experienced now. I know what to expect from a lot of things, and you don't have that same zest. So it's hard to kind of get that motivation like I once had. And I think that just happens, you know, when you get older and you've had so many experiences. So what I really get a lot of joy in is sharing all that experience with younger people and saying, hey, just chill out. It's okay if you screw up, you know, that's how you're going to cure the insecurity. Just don't break your arm, of course, but yeah. Anyways, let's let someone else talk. So again, I'm getting insecure about talking too much.
Yeah, you've really got your second win here, Jeff. but all good nuggets, nonetheless.
I'm trying to get over the insecurity of not talking. Because the last podcast with Eric and Nick, I probably talked maybe 20% of the time. And the last podcast, Nick out-talked Eric, which I don't know how he did that, but he did.
In my defense, so, it was about pain and injury. So
yeah, it was his specialty. So I'm trying to, like, you know, basically embrace my insecurity
and expose myself
to more verbal communication. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But Nick, you know, your question, it's making me think hard right now, you know. In fact, probably harder than I really want to think about it. But, you know, when I think sometimes when you think of, okay, insecurity, what is the positive aspect of insecurity? What is the shining part of insecurity? Kind of what comes to mind is, like, you know, you brought up that analogy of the car, you know, and Jeff, you talked about the youngsters that, you know, they're questioning things, and they've got this insecurity about what is the right why and et cetera. It almost kind of makes me just remember how passionate I am about certain things. And it makes me think, you know, sometimes those insecurities make us realize what we are so passionate about and what we, and the things that we really, really love, you know? So, like, if there was a comment, you know, on my 74 Chevy pickup that my son and I are rebuilding for him, and it brought out an insecurity in me, it would be, I think, because I love that freaking truck. You know, that truck's been in my family for 41 years, you know? And kids that they're insecure about the right way to go about things, and they want the answer now, it's because they really desire to have what Jeff's been working for, you know, 30 some years, and what a lot of people have managed to accomplish. You know, it's kind of like those insecurities almost kind of, at least that's what my thinking brings me to. It lets us know what we're really passionate about and what we really, really love, you know? And sometimes you do have to kind of screw up, you know, and you have to kind of go out on a limb and kind of expose yourself a little bit. And that sting kind of makes you realize how bad you kind of want it when you realize that you weren't doing something right, you know, or I could make my car a little bit better, you know, or just to let that insecurity go. Cause guess what? Some people probably just don't like 74 Chevy pickups. You know, they're too boxy. And so that's the ones that I need to put less.
I had a 74 Chevy step side, and that was cooler, Brad.
And that was roundy, you know, it was less boxy, you know? And so you got to kind of let those insecurities go, because they're not passionate about it and they don't have the same love for it that you do, it doesn't lessen your love. You know what I mean? But gosh, your question just kind of made my brain kind of hurt a little bit as I was thinking about it and listening to Jeff, you know?
Well, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because on one side of the sword, that insecurity helps fuel us to keep pushing. But on the other side, like I said earlier, it can be a thief of joy. Like if you're letting it consume you to a point where you're just a stressed mess all the time, especially if it prevents you from continuing to participate in whatever the endeavor is, in this case, bodybuilding, right? Like in my case, to think of like the insecurity got to me so bad where I'm like, no, I'm never getting on stage because I'm scared of Speedos. Like I would probably not be where I am right now because I would have basically held myself down because of it. So it's definitely a double-edged sword. So you have to use it as a positive fuel source.
Yeah, Brad, I think you put that perfectly. And looking back on my own insecurities, I noticed that it is usually things that I'm very passionate about. Like I mentioned, college or physical therapy school or bodybuilding or working with, you know, 3DMJ or being a father, you know, all these things that I'm super passionate about. Those are the things that tend to bring on the most insecurity. And I think to a certain extent, insecurities can keep us in check. They could prevent us from being that person on YouTube or Instagram that just puts out information and has no reserves and just, you know, that person needs a bit of insecurity, I think, right? So I think sometimes our insecurities can be a good thing and kind of keep us grounded a little bit and have us kind of go through anything that we do or anything that we put out with a fine tooth comb and kind of make sure that we're putting out good quality information or a good quality physique. So I think sometimes it can kind of keep us in check a little bit, but it's that balancing act, right? If it gets too far to the one side, it could hold us back and stifle us. But then if it gets too far the other side, there's just no reserves, and it's just, you know, it could also be harmful. All right, guys. So as we wrap up here, Brad, Jeff, do you have any last closing remarks about insecurities?
You know, the only thing that I was going to bring up was, Jeff, when you mentioned insecurity is the thief of comparison, and I've heard that same
thief of joy. Thief of joy.
I'm sorry. The thief of joy. Insecurity is the thief of joy. You'll find out why I made that little slip of tongue here in a second. But I've heard that same saying a lot, but the only difference is I've heard that comparison is the thief of joy. In fact, really, to be honest with you, I hear that a lot from our pastor here at the Catholic Church. But one of the things that I love about our mission statement, obviously it's our mission statement, so I'm fond of it anyway, but I'm even more so a fan of our mission statement, because when you look at the mission statement, it's almost always, it basically looks at itself. It doesn't compare to others. It doesn't really even talk about bodybuilding as a sport very much. It very much talks about the journey and our brothers and sisters that are walking the same path as we are. And we're trying to, you know, kind of, I, for lack of a better term, master our skill, or, you know, have mastery over what it is that we're trying to accomplish. And I, a lot of times, I overcome a lot of my insecurities when it comes to bodybuilding when I review our mission statement, because it really, it detaches me from not only my insecurities, but just kind of like bodybuilding, the sport, the whole comparison of to the rest of the world all together.
I think for me, I think what I want people to kind of really think about is that whether you're someone like myself who's been training for 34 years, or someone like Brad who's done a gazillion powerlifting meets, and, you know, a guy like Alberto who's thick-skinned, even him, and even the likes of Eric Helms and all these other, you know, really popular guys on the internet and social media, we're all human, and we all have insecurity. It just might be in different areas, but no one is exempt from them. And that's something that I've really realized over the last few years. And I think that's why 3D Muscle Journey, like when we first started coaching, we opened our hearts up on YouTube. We opened our hearts up on social media and showed that we're human. You know, yeah, the science and all that's important. You know, we're trying to optimize bodybuilding and powerlifting and all that. But remember that we're all human. We all have our own lives to take into consideration. We all have families. We have significant others. And, you know, we're not robots. And, you know, you're not always going to be perfect. You're going to be far from it. So I've taken a lot of, I guess I'm at peace in knowing that. So for me, like when I go through contest preps now, or even just in my daily training, like if I'm not hitting numbers in a specific lift or something like that, I'm like, it's okay. You know, I'm still loving the fact that I'm actually in the gym doing something positive. So I think, you know, for people out there that maybe they have a lot of insecurity and it's maybe leaning on the side of, you know, creating stress and not really, it's like kind of impeding that happiness. Like, think about it, like your process, like if it's not creating happiness, then a change in approach is probably necessary and needed.
So they've been listening for over an hour now. Should we finally give them the three secret tricks to overcome insecurities? No, but I mean, man, I think I really appreciate how we are all from different backgrounds, and we can have this conversation about insecurities and all the fundamental and kind of foundational parts of insecurity kind of run true through all of us. Jeff, just like you said, and I think this was a really good conversation. I think the listeners will definitely benefit from it. I know I benefited from it. So yeah, it was awesome. Pleasure talking to you guys.
Hey guys, this is Coach Alberto Nunez. Thanks so much for listening to our show today. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. I wanted to take a moment to remind you guys that we have a giant video library of educational materials at 3dmjvault.com. The vault is a place where we have organized our best information, paired it up with some of our favorite resources, and shared with all of you guys in one online database. We have courses on contest prep, hypertrophy, posing, fat loss, postseason recovery, and a whole lot more. Most of it is free. Some of it is for purchase to help support this podcast, and we continue adding pieces of updated content to it every couple of months that members always have unlimited access to. Once again, that's 3dmjvault.com, and we really hope you like it.